Welcome to Money Radio, WPSE's monthly broadcast of the Rotary Club of Erie meeting program at the Sheraton Erie Bayfront Hotel. Today's speaker is Zach Flock, Executive Director of the Erie Playhouse.
Zach Flock is originally from New Stanton, Pennsylvania, where he grew up performing with the Greensburg Civic Theater. He earned a bachelor's in theater and communication arts and a master's in public administration from Gannon University. Zach served as the founding artistic director of Drama Shop from 2011 to 2022. After 2 years with Erie Arts and Culture and nearly 14 years in the enrollment division at Gannon University, he served as director of marketing and communications at St. Vincent College in Latrobe, PA, before becoming the Erie Playhouse 8th executive director. His first Playhouse production was Beauty and the Beast in 2004, and he has also appeared in Sweeney Todd, The Music Man, and The Producers, during which he met his now wife, Jessica. Please join me in welcoming Zach Flock to the podium.
Thank you, Brevin, and thank you all for having me today. I was going to start off telling you a little bit about myself, but thankfully Brevin did that for me. I will say I'm an executive director of a theater, so I can talk a lot. Please feel free, any one of you, to wave me off at any point if I'm going a little long or if you just want me to move on. So I am the executive director of the Playhouse, a position I've held for about a year and a half now. Like many organizations, particularly performing arts organizations, there are a number of challenges we face post-pandemic, things that are having a lasting impact on our operations. But we're excited about where we are as an organization and kind of what the future has for us. So I thought today I would talk just kind of broad strokes about the Playhouse. I think we're one of those organizations, maybe not unlike the Rotary, that a lot of folks have heard of, know about us, but there's maybe some things that you don't know about what the Playhouse does, who makes up the Playhouse, what we have going on, and where we're going moving forward. So we have been enriching Erie since 1916, again, not unlike Rotary, which I believe was 1913, right? See, I paid attention, Jerry. I got this down. So we have been around for over 100 years. We're now in our 108th season at the Playhouse. When we were founded, we were actually called the People's Theater, which is a bit of trivia that I like to bring out any chance I get, because I think that really speaks to who and what we are as an organization. The idea that the Playhouse exists to serve the people and that we belong to the people. So to me, that name, People's Theater, kind of continues to resonate with me all these years later. Our mission, I'll go ahead and read you our mission statement. The Erie Playhouse educates, entertains, inspires, transforms, and supports communities through theater. A lot to unpack there, right? A great mission statement that any organization needs in order to kind of give us our directive of how we move forward as an organization. And so what I really hone in on, and you'll hear this word from me a lot today, is communities, right? We are all about being a part of the community, supporting the community, and building off of what we do and taking that into the community to support as many different initiatives and individuals as we can. Our core values, love to have some core values, right? We are inclusive, professional, grateful, impactful, and passionate. So these five words, again, like our mission statement, serve to guide us as an organization, and any programming that we do should connect back to these values. So whether it's something we're doing out in the community, in one of our community schools, or the way that we conduct ourselves internally in the office, in rehearsals, whatever it may be, that these are the values that we should be exemplifying as we go through our lives every single day at the Playhouse. And the photo I do want to point out is our recent production of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, the musical, one of our youth theater shows. I will say I am blown away by the level of talent on our stage, particularly the young people. Actually, right now as we speak, well, it's probably wrapped by now, but we had a field trip show earlier today of Tuck Everlasting, our current youth theater production. And I'm down in my office finishing up my slides very last minute. I apologize, Brevin, but I got them to you. As I'm working on my slides downstairs, I hear the kids performing on stage upstairs and the hundreds of school kids that are in the audience just having a blast, enjoying it. And to me, that's why we do what we do. And so it's so fulfilling to have those moments. It's about community. Again, you're going to hear that a lot from me today. This is a group of folks who took a minute in between rehearsals for Guys and Dolls to pose for the camera. Just a few of our community members who really make up the Playhouse and enable us to do the work that we do. We are a community theater, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what it means to be a community theater. I think that's sort of a term that people hear, but you might not kind of know exactly what that means in practice. So, what does it mean to be a community theater? A community theater is typically a nonprofit. We are a nonprofit, which serves a local community and are operated for educational and cultural purposes. So in everything we do, there's that educational component, and then there's that cultural component, enriching the culture of Erie, of Northwest Pennsylvania, and beyond, right? Community theater is performed by amateur actors, singers, musicians, and crew members who are not paid. I think this is probably one of the biggest misconceptions. One of the first shows that opened after I started in this role was Jersey Boys. Anybody happen to see that? I see some heads nodding, hands going up. That's great. It was an outstanding production directed by Richard Davis, our artistic director. It's Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. And so many people came up to me after the show and said, "Where did you find these guys?" Thinking that we had recruited them from, you know, professional theaters, from a Broadway theater. No, they are locals. They work, you know, at UPMC, at the local bank, wherever. They are community members just like all of you who happen to have certain talents and who want to demonstrate those talents and share that experience of putting a show on. Some of them are folks who grew up doing community theater, as I did as a child. Others maybe have never done anything like it before. They're interested in doing something different, putting themselves out there. So they come and audition, and they end up on stage playing, you know, one of the Four Seasons or whoever. Or, you know, my first show at the Playhouse, I was knife number two in Beauty and the Beast 20 years ago. There are no small parts, right? But everyone who's a part of our productions, they are volunteers who are there for the love of the game. And that's the community part of community theater. So there's community on both sides of the equation, right? There's the community we serve, the folks who come see our shows, the folks who participate in our programming. But the members who participate on stage, in the pit, building sets, whatever it might be, they're part of the community we serve as well. And we have an obligation to serve them and to thank them and to acknowledge their contributions, because frankly, without their volunteer hours, without them pouring their hearts and souls into our shows, we wouldn't exist. We wouldn't have the product to share with our region. And to that end, community theaters benefit the public by creating opportunities for learning, for outreach, civic engagement, and economic impact. Brevin mentioned one of my first jobs out of college was at what was then the Arts Council of Erie. It's now Erie Arts and Culture. That was in 2006, 2007. We participated in a study at that point with Americans for the Arts on the economic impact of the arts in Erie County. At that point, so 15 years or so, almost 20 years ago, the economic impact of the arts when that study was done was $15 million on our region. Again, 15 years, 20 years ago. I can't even imagine what that number is now, but I guarantee you it's gone up just as everything has gone up, right? But so the arts and culture sector really has a huge economic impact on our region. And, you know, we only employ 18 people, full-time and part-time employees, but the economic impact goes far beyond that, because it's very rare that someone buys a ticket to a show at the Playhouse and that's the only thing they do that night, right? You're going to dinner beforehand or you're getting drinks after the show. And so you're spending money at those downtown businesses and organizations and contributing to the overall economy. Which is something I know, Gus, you could probably join me and chime in on this as well. The arts and culture sector is a huge economic driver, particularly in a city, in a region like Erie, where tourism is so important, right? We are a piece of that tourism puzzle. We really have three main programs that are kind of the hallmarks of the Playhouse: our main stage, our youth theater, and our playtime program. So I'm going to take a few minutes to talk about each of those. And I'm going to look at my watch because I want to make sure I'm... Again, feel free to just cut me off, right? Great. So I'll talk first about our main stage productions, a great photo from our production of Newsies, which ran over the summer, and we actually extended the run. It was so popular, we added additional performances, which we love it when that happens. by the way, on the subject of extending shows, I will mention that just yesterday we announced, or we put tickets on sale for two additional performances of Beauty and the Beast. The show doesn't open until December 6th, but we were already at about 70% capacity for the shows that were on sale, so we added two additional performances for folks to see Beauty and the Beast at the Playhouse. We're very excited about that. Any opportunity to sell tickets, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to just put that plug out there. So our main stage series, or our main stage shows, are kind of what we're most known for and probably where most people interact with the Playhouse. Those are those typically big name Broadway shows that you hear of, that you come see at the Playhouse. We do seven productions each season, typically five musicals and two plays. Each of those seven productions typically has nine performances, unless we are fortunate enough to be able to extend the runs of those shows. So that makes for 63 performances a year just in our main stage. So if you look at the calendar, there are very few weeks on the Playhouse calendar where there's nothing happening that weekend. Almost every weekend of the year, we have either one of our main stage or youth theater or something going on at the Playhouse. It takes a team to put on our shows. I mentioned community theater being all volunteers, but we do have professionals on the staff side, right? We have our administrative staff and our artistic staff who make all of that possible, and you know, incredible designers at our scene shop, technicians, our front of house staff, box office, house managers. We actually have, in addition to our home venue on West 10th Street, which has been the home of the Playhouse for 40, almost 41 years now, the former Strand Movie Theater, we also have a property on East 12th and Brandis that is our rehearsal hall and shop. That's where all of our sets and costumes are put together, where everything is stored. It's a really cool building. If you ever have an opportunity to check it out, it's worth it. It's a cavernous old building full of really cool stuff, and we have a team of professionals who work over there every single day. So our next show of our 2025 season is Waitress. They're working on Beauty and the Beast right now at the shop, but they're also working on Waitress, right? So just because one show is happening doesn't mean that that's the only thing we're working on at the Playhouse. They're always working a few shows down the road. We also have hundreds of volunteer actors, musicians, and technicians. The folks who play in our pit orchestra are also all volunteers, and they are incredible musicians. It is phenomenal the level of talent that we are able to have support our cast and crew with the music on stage. Our technicians working behind the scenes are volunteers. So our crew members, everybody making all those scene changes happen. I just recently had the, I guess I'll say, good fortune to stage manage Sweeney Todd. I was a last minute substitute. But it is so impressive the amount of work that people put in, not just the actors you see on stage. A couple of people came up to me after the show knowing that I had stage managed and said, oh, really nice job. And I said, well, I hope you didn't see me. Because if you saw me on stage, then something went wrong, right? If you see the crew, there's probably something not going the way it was supposed to. But over the course of a year, we welcome literally tens of thousands of audience members into our theater, which is really awesome. And for a relatively small, we have a $1.4 million budget at the Playhouse. So, you know, as far as nonprofits go, pretty significant. But as far as the scope of the work we do, that we do as much as we do for $1.4 million is frankly kind of impressive. And I don't say that to pat myself on the back. I've only been there a year and a half, and the Playhouse has been around a lot longer than I have. And again, it's all about community. Then we have our youth theater and education program. There's a lot of exciting things happening in this program right now. This photo is from Disney's Descendants, which was a huge hit. Not a property I was particularly familiar with. I'm 41 and don't have children. So this was a learning experience for me, but boy, they went crazy for this show last year. We recently, back in August of last year, we hired a new youth theater and education director, Annika Lexfold. She joined us from Minnesota, right? I'm looking at Nicole. Minnesota. She joined us last year and has really brought new energy and new life to our entire youth theater program. So with our youth theater program, we have three productions per season. Each of those productions typically has eight public performances. And then I went in the middle here and put four, but typically three to five field trip or school performances. So that's what we have going on today with Tuck Everlasting, where a bunch of kids show up on buses, they watch the show, and then they go back to school, and they're probably all wound up in the classroom for the rest of the day. That's not our problem, so we're happy. So over the course of the year, between those public performances and the school shows, we have typically about 36 youth theater productions. Important to note that typically the casts of those productions are almost entirely youth performers. So again, talking about the educational aspect of it, it's an educational experience, not just for the students who get to come see the show, but for those students who are part of the cast and crew of each of those shows as well. Some of our productions, last year, for example, Lyle the Crocodile, I almost said Pete the Cat, that's next year. The production had a few adult roles where we had some adult performers in the show as well. A couple of them were actually teachers, which makes the experience even that much more interesting because they know exactly how to work with those young performers and how to mentor them and how to work together. Growing up doing community theater where I did, most of the shows that I was in were a combination of youth and adult performers. And the opportunity to learn from adults who some have studied this or have just done it for years and years is such a great opportunity, in addition to being directed by Annika, our youth theater director, who has that theater education background and really makes it such a worthwhile experience for all the students involved. In addition to those performances, we have classes that we offer all year long. We do different sessions, so you sign up typically 6 or 8 week sessions, somewhere in that range. Acting classes, dance classes, music, voice classes. We have Saturday Storytellers, which is for, now Nicole, I'm gonna go to you again because your son Parker is actually taking that. What's the age range on Storytellers?
I think it was kindergarten through second grade.
Okay, yeah, so you know, opportunities for young children to get that early taste of performing arts through, you know, storytelling. It's you know, play, it's acting things out. And if we start building those experiences and those skills at that age, it really has a lifelong impact. We also have our summer camps, which have been going on forever, years and years and years. When I was in college, I was one of the staff members for that, and it continues to be an overwhelmingly popular offering at the Playhouse. And then we brought back this past year our Showstoppers group, which is basically a show choir, an audition group of kind of the, not that we judge the kids, but the best of the best, I'll say it. This isn't going out over the radio or anything, right?
Not yet.
But it is, you know, it's a really strong vocal ensemble group that goes out and performs in the community, and we were really excited to bring that program back. It's been really well received, and they do incredible shows, and there's also a community service component. So, for example, they might go to Spring Hill and not only perform for the residents there, but then they might do some sort of arts and crafts activity with them, or, you know, do something to engage with that audience that they're performing with so that everyone's getting something out of it, that the students are growing to appreciate that service that they're able to provide beyond just sharing their talents, but really connecting in a one-on-one way with individuals. So we say that they're building skills that are applicable on the stage, but those are skills that are going to benefit them all throughout their lives. I cannot say enough about how much doing theater as a young person shaped me into the person I am today. You know, I'm an introvert, and yet I'm standing up here speaking in front of a room full of mostly strangers. You all are very welcoming, and I appreciate that. But there are so many skills that our young people get and that adults get from participating in the work that we do together. And the last program I'll talk about, and then I just have a few other updates I'll share, is our Playtime program. This is a really exciting program. It launched back in 2015, and the quickest way to sum it up is that it is a childhood literacy program. But let me kind of unpack that a little bit for you. So Playtime is a program where we have staff members who are our Playtime facilitators who go out into the community, into schools, into some education centers, and help make meaningful connections with individuals through books, using song, using drama, using movement, using all kinds of performing arts skills. Currently, we are in 148 classrooms around Erie County at 21 different sites. We have a presence in all of the community schools. It's pre-K through second grade, I believe. Trish Yates is gonna hear this and yell at me if I got that wrong. Focus on children ages 3 to 7. There, it's in my slide. I should just look at my slides. 79% of the population in those areas or in those classrooms come from families below the federal poverty level. The literacy rates in that population is particularly low. And so having a presence in those schools, in those education centers, helps us to help build a love of learning, a love of reading with the individuals in those schools. Currently, more than 2,400 children are a part of that program this academic year. And what's great about it is it's a multi-year program. So if you start that in pre-K, we're going to come back to that same site while you're moving up those next couple of years, and you're going to continue to engage with that program. So they learn the names, you know, Miss Trish, Mr. Bruce. They, you know, when they come into the classroom, the kids are so excited to connect with our facilitators. And then for the community at large, Playtime hosts a holiday sing-along coming up on December 14th, Saturday the 14th, at the Playhouse. Anyone is welcome to come. The doors are open. You come on in, kids of all ages, and Miss Trish will guide you through a holiday sing-along event. And I believe there's hot chocolate after if you need that extra incentive to come. And last year there was a very special, yes, and donuts, Nicole said. And there was a very special appearance last year. It's a holiday sing-along, so I'll let you draw your own conclusions there. And then at the end of the school year, Miss Trish leads a book come to life experience where she gets permission from the author of a children's book, a different book each year, and creates basically a full play bringing that story to life. And then again, a free opportunity for anyone in the community to come and watch the performance of that show. So last year was Excellent Ed. I haven't heard yet what we're thinking about for this year, but it's really exciting. And again, the goal of Playtime is to inspire a lifelong love of reading and of learning using performing arts. This year we have a new initiative that we are so excited. This is the pilot year for it. It launched in August of 2024. We're hoping that it continues for forever, frankly, and that it grows over time. It's called Playhouse for All. Patrons who have a state-issued access or EBT card can purchase up to 4 tickets to any production for only $5, which is awesome, and we would not be able to do it if not for the support of the Erie Community Foundation. It's funded through a Helping Today grant. We launched it during Shawshank Redemption, which feels like a weird show to be launching an initiative like this. But, I mean, people qualify for access or EBT cards for any number of circumstances, and we were thrilled that all 50 of the available tickets for Shawshank Redemption were claimed pretty early on, and that just about every single one of the individuals who purchased tickets was a first-time customer at the Erie Playhouse. So those are folks who would not have access to the Playhouse otherwise, and that's the entire point of the program. It continued on through Sweeney Todd and through all of our shows, and we allocate 50 tickets per show. If those 50 wouldn't get used, then we would roll them over to the next show and increase the availability for that show. However, so far, we haven't had that happen, which, again, best problem to have, right? This is the pilot year, and hopefully, you know, if it continues, we could potentially get additional funding and increase that number of tickets that we make available per show. And again, as I stated, the goal there is really to expand opportunities so that all members of our community have access to the Playhouse. There are costs to do the things we do. That's the reality of it. This allows us to take down that cost barrier and to make theater accessible for as many folks as we possibly can. Ooh, I had a transition on that side. Oh, yes. Thank you, Nicole. One other new initiative that we launched this past year, I'm sure many of you knew or at least know the name, David Matthews. He was the longtime executive director of the Erie Playhouse. He directed Beauty and the Beast when I was in it those 20 years ago. We, this past year, launched the David and Judy Matthews, well, I shouldn't say last year we launched it. The David and Judy Matthews Scholarship Fund was created several years ago, and then this past year we were able to award our first 2 scholarships. It's for high school students who are graduating and going on to pursue a job in the performing arts, so who are going on to a college program related to performing arts in some way. So we awarded 2 scholarships, just $500 this first year, but as that fund grows, we're hoping to make that a $1,000 scholarship that'll be given out annually. So very excited to honor David's legacy and also Judy Matthews, who is one of the sweetest people you'll ever meet and is a longtime educator, longtime member of the Playhouse family. So I can think of no better way to honor them than to pass that opportunity and that love of theater onto a new generation of students. So thank you, Nicole, for the reminder. I definitely wanted to mention that scholarship fund is something that we hope will just grow and grow and grow over time and really become a benchmark of the work that we do. So I want to talk a little bit about sustaining our community. I kind of said at the beginning, you know, arts and culture, a lot of organizations are still grappling with the impact of COVID-19 on our day-to-day operations and on our bottom line and on what we do as organizations. The Playhouse was obviously not, no pun intended, immune from that, right? There were definitely ways that we were affected and continue to be affected. So I want to talk a little bit. I love numbers. I'm not good at math. I was a theater major, but man, what you can do in Excel, I love it. So I do want to just take a minute to share some numbers here about the past few years here at the Playhouse. So I'm showing just the last 3 years of data here. 2024 obviously is not over yet, but looking at our numbers through October, we're able to kind of forecast where we are likely to end up for the year. So, and I also want to say, I hope that you all appreciate that I am standing in front of you as an executive director of a nonprofit, and I'm talking about the fact that we are operating at a deficit. Okay? It's not ideal. It is where we are. So looking back just to 2022, I'll talk attendance first. Obviously, you can see our attendance figure, 16,493. And then as we moved into 2023, that number increased to 22,438. One of the things I want to note is that from 22 to 23, we didn't change the number of performances that we did. This is people getting used to coming back to the theater, right? To sitting in a room with 400 strangers, breathing the same air, being in a place together, not to mention the financial aspects of it, right? That not everyone, you know, when we're tightening our belts, things like a night at the theater probably get crossed off the list pretty quickly, right? So you can see just 22 to 23, an increase in attendance. And then in 2024, it actually might end up higher than this with the added performances of Beauty and the Beast. But based on where we were at the end of October and kind of looking ahead, we expect to be at about 24,000 in total attendance for 2024. I would also attribute that to, you know, people know what they want to see. And we don't always know what they want to see. Sometimes we make our best guess. We put together a season that we think will appeal to as many people as possible, that will appeal to our season ticket holders, that will appeal to new audiences as well. So it's kind of a complicated dance that we do. Richard Davis, our artistic director, has been doing this for years and is quite good at it. And so he really kind of drives that process of what are the shows we're going to do, which of course have a huge impact on whether or not people are going to come to those shows, right? So I don't want to take away from that aspect of it as well. Our fundraising numbers, I'm really excited. They are moving in the right direction. And we're looking at going from 2 years ago being at just under $160,000 to this year being over $205,000. That's our annual fund goal for the year. We're about $15,000 down right now, but knowing giving history this time of year, we're pretty comfortable that we're going to cross that $205,000 mark. So, of course, the big number that I'm sure you're looking ahead to already and that most people go to right away, revenue after expenses. That is the bottom line, right? So 2 years ago in 2022, we ended that year with a deficit of more than $300,000. And if you go back a few years before that, that deficit was there previously as well, which is significant and which is not sustainable. We're really happy that we've made some strategic decisions. Again, a lot of it goes back to when ticket sales are such a huge generator of revenue for an organization like ours. A lot of it goes back to the season selection and making sure that we're offering shows that appeal to those longtime patrons and those first-time patrons as well. So going from 22 to 23, we were able to reduce that deficit by more than 60%, down to about $126,000 last year. And again, I don't say this to pat myself on the back. I was only in this job for about 6 months of 2023. And so obviously it's increasing revenue, but it's also tightening expenses wherever we can too, while, you know, maintaining the level of artistic quality and staffing and all of those other things that are necessary for the vitality of our organization. And as we end 2024, we are looking at ending with a deficit of about $50,000, which again, compared to last year, is less than, or is more than a 60% reduction again this year. So I would love to be standing here saying we have no deficit this year, but what I am happy to say is we have a much smaller deficit than last year. As we finish our budgeting process for 2025, we are on the calendar year, so that was my night last night. That'll be my night tonight, finishing that and getting that approved through our board. We are budgeting a balanced budget that we believe is realistic and achievable. You can balance budgets all you want, but if the numbers are not based in reality, it's not going to make a bit of difference. So all that to say, as is true for most arts and culture organizations, it's been a very tough 5 years since the pandemic, and crazy to say that it's been almost 5 years since the pandemic, but we are really pleased with the direction that we're headed in, and it is entirely due to the support of our community, to folks embracing the Playhouse and coming back to the Playhouse post-pandemic, post-leadership changes. We're really excited about where we are right now and where we're going to be a year from now. So I'd love to come back in a year from now and show you a number even lower than that. Maybe it won't have any negatives at all. That would be where I'd like to be when I join you next year, as I invite myself back. So, again, everything we do is about community. And so I really kind of want to wrap up here by talking about the fact that the Playhouse, like so many other arts and culture organizations, really plays a vital role in enriching our community. I'm sure many of you move in circles where you talk about economic development, right? That is a big thing in a lot of our jobs, no matter what our jobs are, right? And the thing I always go back to with economic development is it's all about making Erie a place where people want to live, work, and play. You hear that all the time, right? Live, work, and play. And so think about all the things I just told you about what we do at the Playhouse and how that connects to how people in Erie live, work, and play. We create opportunities for people who are bankers by day, doctors by day, teachers by day, stars by night, right? And that gives them an opportunity. And it's not about ego, right? It's not about standing in front of an audience and saying, oh, look how good I am. It's the 6 or 8 weeks of rehearsal. It's the time that they spend working with other people who are passionate about the same things that they're passionate about. And then bringing that and sharing that with an audience and sharing that with the community. So I'm a really big believer that what we do impacts how people in Erie live, how they work, and how they play. Having a place where you can come and see, you know, relatively inexpensive productions that frankly rival anything you would see on a Broadway stage. I think sometimes because our performers are pouring their heart and soul into those 9 performances, what you're getting is infinitely more special than what you might see from that performer on Broadway who's doing this 8 times a week for a paycheck. Not to knock them, I know a lot of people who do it and it's incredibly hard work, but the work of our volunteers, the passion that they bring is unlike anything else that you'll find. And the key takeaway, I'm not asking for money, I swear. Well, maybe I'm a little bit, but I just want to emphasize how important it is that in order for us to do the many things that we do to support the community, we need the community to support us. I couldn't show you that fundraising goal being met if it wasn't for folks in the community making donations. I couldn't show you that attendance figure moving in the right direction for us if not for individuals buying tickets, right? If not for businesses sponsoring the productions and for advertising in our playbills. So the call to action I will give you is if you are in a position or if it makes sense for your organization when you leave here today and go back to work, talk to your boss, talk to your marketing person about do they want to advertise in our playbills? A great way to get visibility for those in front of those tens of thousands of people who come into our theater every day. Sponsoring a production, very inexpensive, and you get tickets. A lot of times, if you do the math, the tickets that you get for your sponsorship, pretty much it pays for itself, right? Making a donation, we did really well the past 2 years on Erie Gives, and we're grateful for that. As I said, we're about 15 or so thousand away from our end of year goal, hoping we'll get there. But you know, we do things like after our Christmas show, we'll have cast members at the back of the theater with their Santa hats collecting donations. Every little bit helps, and we are so grateful to everyone who supports the Playhouse in that way. And then, of course, buy tickets, right? There are, of course, many things we do beyond just the shows on stage, as I talked about. But selling those tickets, getting people in the theater, is essential. If not for that, then what are we doing, right? So as I mentioned, Beauty and the Beast is selling like crazy, like nothing we've ever seen before at the Playhouse. So we, you know, if that's something that you might want to bring the whole family to, it's the perfect family show. We've got plenty of great shows coming up in our next season as well, which is where I'll wrap up by talking very quickly about our 2025 season. Am I okay to do that? Okay, cool. So on your tables, you have a rack card that lists our 2025 season that we announced back in August. The season kicks off in January with the musical Waitress. We are one of the first community theaters in the nation. The Playhouse has been around so long and has garnered such a good reputation with the companies that hold rights to the shows that we like to produce, that a lot of times when a property like Waitress becomes available, they reach out to us. Richard gets an email from MTI or from whomever the license holder is saying, hey, Waitress is going to be available. Do you guys want to apply and see if you can get the rights to it? So we're very excited that we'll be doing that production, one of the first community theaters in the nation to do so. Then we have our youth theater production of Pete the Cat. Again, I don't have kids, but I'm told that's a very popular book. And then Prince of Egypt on our main stage. Our next youth theater is The Phantom Tollbooth Jr. That book I know. I remember that one. Then we have The Da Vinci Code on our main stage, which I'll actually be directing. I'm very excited. It'll be my first time directing a Playhouse show. So you might know the movie, which gives you a little bit of an advantage, but the play is a little bit different. So, you know, I still think it is absolutely going to be an enjoyable experience, even if you've seen the movie already. Perhaps even more so because you're trying to figure out how is this going to work on the stage, right? Then we're doing Cats, which the Playhouse did, I want to say it was 15 years ago. Hugely popular, crazy complicated show. I promise you, you will not see me on stage in that show. Don't worry. It is a dance show. It is for people much more talented than myself. Then we'll do the classic My Fair Lady, which is, of course, a show that everybody just loves and is beloved, followed by the play The Elephant Man, and then Emma, a pop musical. That is a youth theater show that'll be in November of 25. And then we will end our 2025 season with a huge show that I can't tell you what it is just yet. I can probably tell you after Wednesday of next week what that show is. I mentioned when I was talking about Waitress how sometimes the rights holders reach out to us and say, we're going to start allowing people to do this show. Is this one you would be interested in doing? I'm guessing they probably didn't even finish the sentence before Richard said yes. It is a huge show, and I'm going to tease it like crazy, and that's all I can tell you today. But if things go the way we expect them to go over the next few days, we'll probably be making an announcement on Wednesday of next week. So that's our 2025 lineup. We're calling it our season of soaring tales and epic adventures. It is a huge season, and we are so excited to share that with our community. So season tickets are already on sale. Our choice cards, our traditional season tickets, all of those options already on sale. And the last thing I'll say is they make great holiday gifts as well. So thank you all for the opportunity to talk a little bit about the Playhouse today. And I would be happy to answer any questions you may have. Yes? Right. So the question was, does the $205,000 I mentioned as our fundraising total, does that include ticket sales? And the answer is it does not. That is just fundraising. So that is the $205,000 is just our annual fund. So that is mostly soliciting past donors. We got just under $60,000 through Erie Gives. So it really is those individual donations. Some of it's corporate donors, but it is exclusively just donations. So,
and you must use EITC too?
We do receive EITC funding as well from several organizations. And that's a great way, again, if you work for a business who participates in EITC, the Playhouse is eligible to receive EITC dollars. But that actually is not included in the fundraising line either. That's a separate budget line. Yes, ma'am. Wonderful question. So the question was, how does the Playhouse still exist after running for multiple years at a deficit? So short answer is cash reserves. You know, as a nonprofit, we are essentially operating or attempting to operate on a balanced budget. But then any additional surplus, you know, we're able to hang on to a certain, you know, percent. And we do have an endowment. We did not have to draw on anything other than the interest of our endowment, but the cash reserves were pretty severely depleted after those couple of significantly challenging years. Yes, sir. Yeah, so that's a great question about the attendance figures and where we see them going over the next few years based on where they have been the past few years. So this is total attendance that's on the slide. So it's you can see the increase from 22 to 23 and then 23 to 24. I would say we don't anticipate that number is going to continue to increase by significant margins. Of course, our goal is to see that number increase. But when it comes to budgeting, and I've been so, deep in budgeting over the past couple of weeks that I could go on and on about it, but I tend to be very conservative in my budgeting, particularly when it comes to anticipating audience size. Because as Nicole, as our marketing manager, can attest, there are a million things that we do to promote every single show, and some shows catch on and others do not. And it's not a failure of marketing. It's it's a failure of the audience to buy tickets, right? I know what that sounds like, right? But that is sometimes the reality, right? That a particular show, for whatever reason, and maybe it was the wrong choice for us, maybe it was a show that doesn't have enough appeal for our market. But so then when we do the budget from year to year and we're figuring out, what do we expect our ticket sales to be? I mean, I always say with budgeting, first of all, the best indicator of how we'll do next year is how we did last year. So let's not stray too far from those actual numbers from the previous year. But then where do we see opportunity for growth? So we literally go through all of the shows that are on the 2025 season. We calculate, what do we think the percent capacity for each show will be? In other words, how much of our theater do we think will sell for the run of that show? And then convert that into dollars, right, based off of ticket sales. So when it comes to budgeting for 2025, the attendance is pretty much comparable to 2024. So then if for some reason we do see a decrease, hopefully it's not significant enough that it impacts that number. But if we do continue to see audience growth, great. Right, that might make up if our sponsorships are low or if our donations fall short. So I would say we play it very conservatively, but I do hope that we continue to see that growth through doing some shows like Da Vinci Code, right, which is not necessarily a traditional community theater show. This past year, I would compare that to Shawshank Redemption, which we didn't know how it would sell, and it sold really well. It far surpassed the goal that we had set internally for that show. So I suspect that audience growth will continue, but we are not relying on audience growth continuing. That's a great question. So how do we increase our revenue, basically? I'll just leave it at that rather than repeating the whole question. How do we increase our revenue so that we get rid of that deficit for next year? So that last slide I had up about advertising, sponsorships, those are two areas where, to put it bluntly, I think we can do better, and where we have fallen a little bit short this past year of what we budgeted. So we have some changes internally as far as staff responsibilities and have some different folks paying attention and working on those metrics. So if we can increase, $50,000 is in a $1.4 million budget, it's not nothing, but it's also not an insurmountable number, right? If we can increase sponsorships by $10,000, if we can increase Playbill ads by $10,000 or $15,000, there's 20 of it right there, So there are some incremental things we can do. We'll bump our annual fund goal up a little bit. It's at 205 this year. Maybe it goes up to 210 or 215 next year. So we'll try to do it in a bunch of little ways. Season tickets is another way. So we've seen an increase. As soon as we announce our 2025 season, which we did in August, we put those season tickets on sale, and we're tracking ahead of where we were at this point in the previous year. So season ticket sales increasing is another way that we're hoping to reduce that deficit.
Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Money Radio, WPSE's monthly broadcast of the Rotary Club of Erie meeting program at the Sheraton Erie Bayfront Hotel. You can replay this episode or access other archived shows by visiting the Podcasts tab on our homepage.